good evening and welcome to the first Late Debate of this week. Joining us here in RTE tonight, we have Jennifer Carl McNeill, Fine Gael TD for Dunleary, Richard Boyd Barrett, Solidarity People Before Profit TD for Dunleary, Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fine Gael and spokesperson for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, and Gerard Howland, Public Affairs Consultant and Irish Examiner columnist. We want to hear from you, so do get in touch. Text us on 51551. Email latedebate at rte.ie or tweet to at latedebate.rte. Now, to begin, let's just take a listen to this.
I was very alarmed by the aggressive approach taken by Leo Varadkar on RTE last night. You see, governments ask for advice. And when given advice, I think you accept it with some level of maturity and grace, and then you make your decision. The NEFIT recommendation comes against a backdrop of very high levels of community transmission. Listening to the Taoiseach the last night, you'd never think that he had been Minister for Health.
So that was, of course, Mary Lou MacDonald, Sinn Féin leader there, speaking on leaders' questions in the Dáil today. And this is the row over the leaked letter from NEFIT to the Health Minister on Sunday evening, asking the government to approve moving the entire country to level 5 of COVID restrictions. That, of course, was rejected by the government, moving instead to level 3 for the whole country. And the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar lambasted the CMO, the Chief Medical Officer Tony Hoolan, and NEFIT in an extraordinary interview on Clareburn Live last night. If I can go to you first, Gerard Howland. Just looking at social media over the last 24 hours, they seem absolutely convinced with, I don't know what evidence, that it was NEFIT that leaked this letter. Which would obviously be a major breach of trust. Would that make sense, that it would be NEFIT that would be behind that leak?
Well, there's almost 40 people on NEFIT, and I don't know how many people who would have had sight of that letter subsequently. I can't imagine there was less than a cast of 50 people here. And if somebody on social media can find that needle in the haystack, well done to them. I'm sure we'll never be any the wiser, speculate as we might. However, it did absolutely upset the apple tart, as a former boss of mine once said, and it provoked the government into a fairly swift rebuttal in a way that, on the one hand, saw them taking charge of a health policy they had previously, at least for public consumption, delegated to an expert group. And that's now a permanent political reality for them that they're going to have to deal with in good times and bad for months ahead through what I predict will be a series of COVID-19 crises. And in addition to which, the Taoiseach, in his Clareburn interview, I think did something else that was extremely significant. That in doubling down on the government's position, he altered the choreography of himself and Fine Gael in relation to government generally over months, where they had stood aside, stood back, and perhaps even, if social media is to be believed, I wouldn't necessarily do that, of course, actually been kicking the shins of some of their colleagues under the table and whispering off a stage to journalists about them. In going on Clareburn Live, in doubling down on the government's position, what Leo Varadkar has done is put himself front and centre of the government's policy as a whole, so that a semi-detachment of Fine Gael, which arguably has worked for them politically very well over the last few months, and their poll ratings would indicate that, is now over. So a couple of things have happened that will have long-term political consequences vis-à-vis the position of the parties within government and in terms of the government's position overall. NEFIT will continue, but the government is now centre stage, and that's permanent.
I see from leaks, more leaks, from the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party meeting this evening, that the Taoiseach is saying that it's now important that he didn't know why the communications between the government and NEFIT had broken down, but it was important now to move on, as it was Ireland versus the virus and not the government versus NEFIT, which is... what would you make of that, Gerard?
Well, look, the live screening or tweeting of parliamentary parties is a new tradition, so let's see how accurate it is.
But what about the Taoiseach just saying that he didn't know why communications between the government and NEFIT had broken down?
Well, he broke them with his colleagues first on Monday during the day in terms of their policy decision, which government, by the way, was absolutely entitled to do. And in fairness to the Taoiseach, on Claiborne Live, he articulated, as the Taoiseach had previously, clear reasons for doing that, and that's what government is for, to make those decisions. But subsequently, of course, the tone, tenor and content of his interview went much further. So, you know, I think he took a tactical response. He's a very fluent performer. That was a commanding interview, but it was a lot of political capital to spend in a way that will have strategic consequences for essentially what should have been a tactical purpose.
Jennifer, can I put that to you? There will be strategic consequences for how Leo Varadkar handled that interview last night.
In what sense? In what sense strategic?
In the sense that the public health body that was put there by the government in order to dispense public health advice has now been undermined.
Well, we also have another structure which was set up deliberately a number of months ago, which is a body in between NPHET and the cabinet decision-making process to tease out and go through recommendations from NPHET, to go through them in detail and work out the practicalities of them and where inconsistencies come up, to have all of those discussions in private. And that's a body chaired by Martin Fraser, and that body is there to take the recommendations of NPHET and tease that out. The process is that NPHET make a recommendation, it goes through that, and then it goes to a political process. And my understanding, of course I'm not directly involved, but my understanding is that that didn't happen on this occasion. So that's the, you know...
In what way did that not happen on this occasion?
My understanding is that it came straight out by whatever means, and I don't know what means, and it's very unfortunate that it did. But that meeting was due to be held on Monday. There's a cabinet meeting scheduled for Tuesday. So the normal course would be that the recommendations coming from NPHET would then be teased out at that meeting, which is on the Monday, which had been scheduled prior to any political discussion.
But surely
the way that it came out, which is incredibly unfortunate though, upset so many people around the country and woke up with real worry about what was going to happen that day.
Well,
and
there's no doubt about that, but are you suggesting that NPHET was responsible for
that?
I'm
not suggesting anything of the kind. That's not what I've said at all. What I'm saying is, you said, are the strategic consequences for the way in which these bodies interact.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is there's already a process that goes from NPHET to Cabinet with a detailed discussion.
But sorry,
that
my
didn't
understanding,
happen on this occasion.
Yeah, but my understanding is
I hope that it goes back to that.
But my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but my understanding is that the process has always been that NPHET meets... It agrees on the advice, it puts it into a letter, and it sends that letter to the Minister for Health. And then he moves on to the next step, which has this new body now has been inserted into that in recent times, this body, the Martin Fraser Oversight Group that you mentioned there. But that was something for the Minister to do after. The fact that they met on a Sunday surely just indicates their concern over the developing situation and the numbers that they were seeing.
Absolutely.
And
the intention
was... So they did what they would normally
thing.
Do.
Yeah,
but you're saying...
No, I think we're saying the same thing. What I'm saying is that meeting was supposed to happen on Monday, the meeting chaired by Martin Fraser, before any political decisions were ultimately made in relation to it. But because of the nature and the way it came out on Sunday night, and because of the worry and the very serious implications that it would have had to go from level 2 in most of the country to level 5.
Whose fault are you saying that
is? I'm not saying it's anybody's fault. But you asked me about the strategic consequences, the change to how this is run, and I'm saying I hope there won't be a change from NPHET making recommendations, it going to that body, and then going to Cabinet. I don't know why that didn't happen this time, is what I'm saying. And I hope that there isn't a strategic change, that's what will happen in the future.
Richard.
Well, I think it's fascinating the management, the political management of information and considerations. And it's something I've been concerned about since the beginning, to be honest. Whether it was EAG minutes or NPHET minutes or what was the rationale behind decisions. And now then we have buffer groups set up between NPHET. And this is all about the political management of data and information, because the government certainly, I'm not sure about NPHET, don't trust the public with the facts. And actually, they should, because the public are the key to defeating COVID-19. And when the public are confident that decisions are being made based on good evidence, the public will go with this, these things. But instead, there's a distrust in government for political reasons. And then we this results then in this bad falling out with a really unbelievable attack by the Taoiseach, which is politics. This is a political attack.
I don't accept any of that.
That's the way I see it, and that's the way it looks. A political attack on NPHET in order really to cover the fact that they were saying things and bringing forward facts that the government didn't like, and that didn't make the government's efforts, particularly over the summer, look very good in terms of ICU, in terms of ramping up the tracing regime. And by the way, just to throw into the mix, I also think there could be tensions going on between the HSE and NPHET. That was bubbling away before.
Well, there was a reference made to that last night in terms of a dispute about what our capacity remaining was between NPHET and
absolutely. Not wanting to admit that there is capacity problems in terms of ramping up the ICU to the level it should be at.
I'm sorry, all of that...
That's a credible explanation of what's happened.
You know, the ICU capacity has gone up from 225 to 280 with the capacity to have 360. There's currently less than 25 people there.
Okay, you know, can we go slowly there because those numbers are complicating, and we're hearing all sorts of numbers about this ICU capacity. Can we nail it for once and for all? We were told this week that there was 39 available ICU beds at the current situation, with the number, there's 23 COVID patients in ICU beds, and there are 200 and where is my numbers for that? Am I right? Yes. So this is it. Yeah. So 243 patients in intensive care units, including 23 coronavirus patients. This left 39 critical care beds. That's in a report in the Irish Times this evening. Are those numbers not correct?
The briefing I have from the Taoiseach this evening is that there are 24 patients currently in ICU for
COVID. That's one more than we had. Yeah.
Not all of whom necessarily need to be there around the country, in the sense that some of them are being there but not necessarily being ventilated. The capacity
has increased.
I'm told 8
patients are on ventilators.
You're not going to be in ICU, be fair now.
No, I'm sorry.
No, you're not going to be admitted to an ICU bed if you don't need to be there.
Do you know
because
that for certain?
A doctor makes the decision to admit you to an ICU bed.
And sometimes you get additional care, but not necessarily ventilation Louise.
So
but you know,
it is
you and I are speaking without coming
It is unlikely that you would be admitted to an ICU bed if you do not need to be there. In the same way as the 200 plus people who are on trolleys are not there because they don't need to be in hospital. They're there because they very definitely need to be in hospital. So if we're going to have a conversation about capacity, well then let's look at the people who are on trolleys. So let's look at the capacity that is there. Let's look at what NPHET is saying, but also let's look at what the Irish Hospital Consultants Association, the IMO, the INMO, SIPTU, all of the workers' representatives, people who are on the coalface, on the front line of this pandemic, they are raising serious questions about our capacity. And that is what is worrying people. They're not worried about, you know, is so-and-so having a spat with so-and-so? Is so-and-so digging someone under the table on the shins? They are worried about the capacity of our health service to respond. And they are asking themselves, the same as everybody else in the state is asking themselves, what was being done in the last couple of months when we were told lockdown so we can build in capacity, so we can build up test and trace? That obviously was not done. Well, and that is what is concerning NPHET. And that is what is concerning people who are out there this evening.
Let's just do this in order, because there's a couple of different things that I have to respond to there. First of all, the capacity has increased by 800 beds overall in acute and subacute beds. The capacity for the ICU has gone up from 225 to 280 with the capacity to bring that up to 360. Now, this is crucial because we're linking this, we're linking this though to the reasons. I mean, what's been said here by the other two commentators, by the other two participants, is that somehow the government is resiling from this, from NPHET's recommendations, because there isn't the capacity. That isn't the issue. The capacity isn't the issue. Of course we want to get more, and of course the people who are working there, but that takes a bit of time. But we're not at a pressure point yet where we're not saying we're not going to introduce new restrictions because we don't have the capacity in the healthcare. That's not the concern at the moment, and that's not related to the decision making in relation to NPHET. These things are being linked, and that's not necessarily the case.
I understood from the very beginning, we go all the way back to March, that all the decisions around lockdown are related to our fears about or our concerns around capacity. So the idea that the decisions this week have nothing to do with capacity are completely unrelated to capacity seems a bit of a stretch.
As Taoiseach said last night, the third reason that we didn't believe that this was appropriate at this time is that there isn't an imminent pressure on the hospitals being overwhelmed. There's 800 new beds in the hospital system, 150 of since St Patrick's Day, 150 of which now have COVID patients in them. So we are not at a point where we are so worried about the overwhelming the health system that we need to move to level 5.
Could you answer as to why there's 200 people plus on trolleys then? If there's capacity, are you suggesting that they're rationing capacity? And if they are rationing capacity, are they doing it because they're afraid of a surge, which they know they can't cope with? So we keep coming back to the same thing. Nobody, absolutely nobody, is under any illusions about the capacity of our health service. But the question is, what was being done as we were supposed to prepare for the potential of a second wave? That work wasn't done.
Okay, Richard.
This really does get to the nub of things. You see, when Jennifer talks about surge capacity of 360, what she forgets is that we had that surge capacity in April, and at that point, ICU was being done in theatre, in waiting rooms for theatres, right? And everything else had to stop. And this is the fear. So it's not about just the surge capacity. What is the impact of going to surge capacity? The impact of going to surge capacity is everything else stops. So to be honest, the Taoiseach was really playing with the facts today when he said, the reason we don't want to go to level 5 is because we want to keep non-COVID care going. Precisely the reason that NPHET, I think, were recommending, and in my opinion were correct to recommend level 5, is because they don't want to get to a point where the hospital capacity is so overrun that you're ending up having to make choices between COVID and non-COVID care. And if you take out the surge capacity, we have less ICU capacity now than we did in April. The only additional ICU capacity that's being proposed in the winter plan is 17 additional beds. And let's remember, in 2009, the HSE themselves said we needed over 500 ICU beds. If we were in Germany today and the proportion of ICU beds, we wouldn't be panicking. There wouldn't be a need to increase restrictions. The reason they're talking about increasing restrictions is because we are terrifyingly close to reaching ICU capacity.
Okay, let's go and go back to last night and what the Taoiseach said were the reasons behind their rejection of the advice from NPHET.
The problem that we had with the proposal that was put to us today was that we didn't feel it had been thought through properly. We asked for some comfort that 4 weeks might be enough. They weren't able to give us that comfort. Okay. We also asked them what would happen after the 4 weeks if it didn't work. They said they hadn't contemplated that. We asked, is it credible to keep the schools open for those 4 weeks during a strict lockdown? They thought it was. We weren't so sure. We asked them, what do we say to the 400,000 people who lose their jobs tomorrow and all those businesses? We need to tell the Department of Social Welfare staff to get ready. We need to know what to say to businesses. They thought that was a political matter for us.
And that was Leo Varadkar last night. I mean, is it reasonable to ask anyone? I mean, were NPHET ever asked to predict where you would be 4 weeks into it? I mean, does the government know where we'll be in 3 weeks' time after level 3?
Well, I think the answer is if you go into lockdown at a level 5 lockdown, and if it doesn't work, what's the period? Because that's what government needs to have a plan for. Is it 3 weeks? Is it 4 weeks? Is it then 3 months? Is it 4 months? Because there are massive societal and economic consequences for that. And government needs to be prepared for that. And it needs to be aligned with other European partners to make sure it has the funding available and prepared and ready for that. So that's what I think he means by that is, what's the plan? Like, where does this go? And what does success look like for something like that? We've seen that level 3 has worked in the various counties where it has been, in Kildare and so on. We've seen stabilisation in Dublin. So we've seen that level 3 can work.
That keeps being trotted out, the fact that level 3 was so successful in bringing Kildare and Laois and Offaly back down. But we know that it was a completely different scenario in those.
You're right.
In those, they were clustered.
You're right.
We knew where it was coming
You're
from.
Right.
You could hone in on that. We are not. The current situation in Dublin, in particular, and particularly in the other urban centres, is completely different to that.
You're right, and we've seen that in the COVID committee, that the presentation around Dublin is different, the distribution is different. In some senses, they were saying the clusters are easier to manage because you can focus on that. In others, it's more dispersed, and that makes it more difficult. We are beginning to see a stabilisation in Dublin, and I hope that continues over the next number of days.
The numbers are still rising.
The number in Dublin is down over the last 2 days. Do you know what I mean? So it's a stabilising. But I hope that persists for another 3 or 4 days. But we're not seeing that in other places. But we need to go to level 3 first. The plan was never ever to go from level 2 to level 5. That isn't envisaged in the government's plan. It's to go through a gradated process, and to go from level 2 for most of the country to level 5 would have simply massive, massive consequences for everybody. And we need to be able to know what that looks like, to prepare for that, to have some sense that we will get to that in a number of weeks' time, if that's where we need to go.
Is that not impossible, Louise? It would have been a huge shock to the whole country in every way, economically, socially, emotionally.
But that's why there needs to be very clear lines of communication between the government and EFET, and obviously that wasn't there. Now, I mean, we're sitting here trying to second guess what the Taoiseach meant yesterday when he said that the EFET proposals were not thought through. They had obviously direct engagement with EFET. They put those questions to them, and EFET said, well, that's a political decision. Now, these are people who've been working together for the last number of months.
That struck me as well, though. It is a political decision, surely. It's not up to EFET, surely, to manage it's up to EFET to provide
the advice, but it is also up to the political system to provide the resources. So I checked it there. It's 250 people were on trolleys. So if we have all this capacity, and, you know, there's a reason why there's a massive question mark hanging over every government person who comes out to defend what is, quite frankly, the indefensible, is if there are 250 people on trolleys, we'll go and tell them why they can't have one of these beds that you say is there. Those beds clearly are not there and can't be relied on. The staffing levels within the health service has not improved to the extent that it would have been expected. All of those people who signed up to be on call for Ireland, all of them were simply left. They filled out a form. Some of them were diverted into CPL to go for private contracts. But basically, we haven't increased the capacity within the health service. And the question remains, what was being done for the last number of months? And as a further question, and that is brought up by the 31 people in Laois, who we now know there's a cluster in a nursing home in Laois, as was announced today. So what is the plan for keeping COVID out of our nursing homes? Back in March and April, we saw once that COVID got into the nursing homes that it took hold very, very quickly. It had huge, massive impact for people. So what is the plan to keep it out of our nursing homes? What is the plan? And that's what people want to hear. They don't want to hear a spat between Leo Varadkar. They don't want to hear what he had to say about EFET last night, because I think that was absolutely, I think it was shameful the way he did that. And I think, you know, public health advice has to be acknowledged. But I think also, if we are going to sit here and second guess what the Taoiseach was saying, well, then let's look at what's in the Independent are reporting tonight. In as much as he said, there's going to be what he's calling now a circuit breaker. A circuit breaker cannot be ruled out. So he says one thing on a Monday, he says another thing on a Tuesday. You'd nearly think the man was just jumping up and down looking for attention.
What people don't want to hear is just the ongoing politicking of it. You know what I mean? Some leak from some parliamentary party meeting reported in the Independent. These are really serious, serious things. And going from level 2 to level 5 is too big a jump. It takes a lot of planning. You know, and I mean, nobody has ever ruled out going to level 5 or anything like it.
Businesses are watching this very, very closely, because they're the ones that have to deal with this. So they're trying to pick up straws in the wind because they aren't getting clear information from the government.
Let Jennifer finish that point.
But that's exactly the point, because we never ever envisaged going from level 2 to level 5 for precisely those reasons. It's far too much of a shock. You'd need time to plan it. Already we're trying to put in business supports for people who are being impacted by the current restrictions with the 30% top up to the Restart Plus grant. But that's exactly the point. So feathers in the wind, this is exactly what we're trying to avoid. We have a system there for doing that. It didn't work this weekend. I totally acknowledge that. But you know what I mean? It doesn't help either, you throwing it out for your own political advantage, that you've seen this or you've seen that, and it's more stir and it's more confusion, and that becomes
your
narrative.
Is that what he said?
But I'm not going to discuss private party meetings, but it's entirely possible.
A circuit break cannot be ruled out.
Can I just play the line from the interview last night that I think really shocked a lot of people, in terms of, you talked about people don't want to hear the politics and this going on. I mean, this was an incredibly political accusation that the Thánaiste made against the members of NPHET.
Very good people, 40 of them, but all coming from medical or scientific or civil service backgrounds. None of those people would have faced being on the pandemic unemployment payment yesterday. None of them would have to tell somebody that they were losing their job, and none of them would have had to shutter a business for the last time. And I'm not talking about the economy. I'm talking about something that could have happened to 500,000 human beings tomorrow.
I was basically Leo Varadkar saying the members of NPHET are totally out of touch. And he had made other similar remarks in relation to, you know, the lack of things being taught through. I just want to give you a few lines from the commentary around it. Daniel McConnell in The Examiner, he didn't just throw Dr. Houlihan under the bus. He reversed the bus over him again and again. Fionnán Sheehan, his piece in The Independent this evening, the dressing down of Tony Houlihan shows Leo Varadkar's cheap, nasty, populist streak. Jean Carrigan says, can anyone stand over allowing Leo Varadkar to casually trash the expert body on whose credibility public health measures depend? Reckless, abysmal, sickening. Jennifer.
NPHET and the government and the previous government have worked incredibly well together, and there have been plenty of disagreements along the way, but they haven't come out in public and they haven't been aired in public.
But
there has been a forum.
This was your party leader who washed this dirty linen in public.
There have been plenty of disagreements over time, as I was saying, and they have been able to resolve those and have discussions. We have a forum for being able to have those discussions. The recommendation that came out from NPHET in that letter, in whatever way it came out, was incredibly serious, and it had huge implications for business and people all over this country. And the Thánaiste was reflecting the gravity of that and the gravity for people's livelihoods that that would have had. People woke up and went to bed on Sunday night if they heard it then, and woke up on Monday morning. And I know because my office received the communications, as I'm sure many other people did, and they were genuinely terrified about the implication for their business and for their lives and for their families and everything else, and the sheer shock of it and the way that it happened with no time to prepare or anything
else.
And the
person responsible for that was whoever leaked that information and put that information to the public domain in those circumstances. But was it really necessary for Leo Varadkar to have such a public dig at the members of a body that the government put together?
I think what he said
and
there.
And put together in the way and you and sought the expertise, yeah, and only the
and
expertise that was on that
and
body.
And they have performed exceptional service to everybody. But I think what he was saying there is, look, I appreciate we're getting this piece of advice, but it's the politicians, as we've said, that have to make the decisions. The politicians have to make the decisions about how we're going to pay for these things, about the restrictions on people's livelihoods. And so while we have this advice, there's another set of decisions that have to be made, that have to make a more a rounded, balanced decision on behalf of the people generally, taking into all of those considerations. And this was a step change that was out of line with the gradiated plan that has been agreed by government. And there, you know, and that is different. And his reaction was different. And I acknowledge that. But it's one that recognises the gravity of the situation of what was being recommended.
Okay, I want to go and bring in Gary Stack. Gary is a GP based in Killarney, down there in the kingdom. Good evening, Gary.
Good evening, Katie.
Yeah, we were talking, and Jennifer was talking about the people who contacted her office the morning after that Sunday evening leak. You were at the coalface of that. Can you describe the reaction that you got to that leak?
I suppose people were absolutely shocked. People were very frightened. COVID certainly has increased the overall level of anxiety in the community across the board. People who never had anxiety before, everybody's level of anxiety has been increased. That unfortunately has spilled over in some patients into causing significant problems. But this, what happened on Sunday night, certainly hugely added to that. And we've been I've dealt with that yesterday and today, and even tonight on duty late hours in South Dock. That worry, that anxiety. I think we should go back to first principles here. I listened in to Leo's interview, and I can understand the anger, but I don't know why that wasn't why he spoke like that. I can understand where he was coming from, but I don't think it's ever for the benefit of the patient. That's going back to first principles. It's not to the benefit of the patient to have this row in public with another doctor. You need to clear your lines and see how best to manage. And whatever his reasons were, they weren't in the interest of the public, or in this case, well, what I would say, in the interest of the patient. Yeah. He had plenty of good reason to do it, but it should have been done behind closed doors with Tony Houlihan and a joint presentation prepared.
And you think he did have good reason to do it, though?
I think he had. I mean, what came out, who's responsible for the leak, I don't know. But that leak on Sunday night, I think people were absolutely thrown by it. One of the first things that Tony Holan should have learned in general practice is how to break bad news. You prepare the patient for it, you bring the patient with you. And that did not happen on Sunday night.
Gary, Kerry has avoided really the worst of this from the very beginning. So you've had pretty low case numbers right through this. Is there a sense that, and you obviously are going up to level 3 tonight at midnight along with everybody else, how will that go down there?
I think people are accepting of level 3. Maybe was that part of the reason in leaking it, that people would accept less when they're told very bad news, that maybe it isn't as bad, you can go to level 3. I think people have responded. There are certainly exceptions to that, and I would like to see greater enforcement of what's happening, because it is, I think it's common knowledge in every town in the country where the advice is not being followed, where the advice has been broken and people's lives have been put at risk. Kerry has been very lucky. Yes, it was actually quite high at the start, but the level has stayed quite low. It's still in the bottom 4 or 5 counties, despite all of Dublin moving to Kerry for July and August.
Yeah, well, I'm guilty of that myself. But
well, you were only coming home.
Indeed. Why do you think?
I mean, the Gerard Howell gave a very astute political summary of what's happened in the last 2 days. And Richard Boyd Barrett spoke about transparency of the figures, which needs to happen, and the false economy of over the years of having so few hospital beds and so few ICU beds. But at the end of the day, it's not the political. I'm not interested in the political. It's the effect on my patients and the effect on everybody in the country. And what has happened in the last 2 days has been a disgrace from both sides, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, Gary Stack, many thanks for joining us with that. I'll let you go because I want to move on to the discussion about, you know, level 3 and whether or not it is going to be sufficient, because we know we've been hearing some commentary around today that we're just putting off the inevitable, that you know, it hasn't worked in Dublin and therefore it is... it's putting off the inevitable, and then perhaps we're facing into level 5 in the run-up to Christmas, which would be the worst possible time for many families.
We may very well go to level 4 and level 5 if the numbers require it. There's no question about that. That's envisaged within the plan. I hope that doesn't happen. We've seen that level 3 can be effective, and I hope that it will be effective and that we can come out of it, either stay in level 3 or come back out of it as soon as may be. We're not in a situation where we can plan or promise for Christmas, and anybody who tries to go down that road, I think, will not be thanked. We're trying to manage a pandemic and an economy at the same time. And, you know, while we want everybody to be able to be with their family at Christmas, we'll be managing the virus and the economy first to try to get us through to next year.
I want to bring in Gerard because...
Can I just make one very brief point? We need to look at the factors that are going to be driving people into work when they're sick. So people who cannot access income continuance if they need to take some time off because their child has been told they're home for a couple of weeks. We need to look at those factors. We need to also look at the fact that they have cut the pandemic unemployment payment, a deeply, deeply cynical move. And I can tell you last night when the Taoiseach tried to hide behind himself as some kind of, or to portray himself as some kind of campaigner for workers' rights, in the same week as they hired their advisors, accepted a pay rise, they also then cut the pandemic unemployment payment. And I think, you know, you have to create the conditions for everybody to be able to do their very, very best. And some of it is around creating the economic conditions for families. We also saw the very same Taoiseach refused or failed completely to stand up to the banks and ensure that they would grant people an extension on their mortgage break, because for an awful lot of people that's going to fall due now in the next couple of weeks, and they'll find themselves in a situation where they maybe cannot go to work through no fault of their own, and their mortgage is going to fall into default. That's going to affect businesses, that's going to affect workers. So let's look at the economic drivers that are forcing people out the door. And so if level 3 is going to work, it has to work with those supports. It will not work without them.
Okay, Gerard, I was going to go to you there. This, as you said previously, is an enormous gamble for this government, because up until this point, even though there was a few times here and there where the actions that the government took diverged in some small way from the advice from NPHET. Largely, every decision had cover from NPHET, you know, a lot of cover from NPHET. That's gone now. And I know Stephen Donnelly, the Minister for Health, was asked three times. I heard him three times today. He's probably asked again. I saw he was coming on prime time as I was coming down. If he would take responsibility if all this goes horribly wrong. And I know that he has sort of danced around that or suggested that the virus would be responsible if it went wrong. It's a huge gamble, isn't it?
It's a huge gamble with public health. It's a huge gamble politically. I mean, I will say one thing. Right or wrong, the government did produce a reasoned approach to why it took the decision. So, you know, there's pros and cons for this. But having took the decision, they will take the consequences. We will take it first as a community, secondly as an economy, if this doesn't work. Because the Taoiseach saying we may have a circuit breaker level 5 intervention is not news. That's precisely what the government said might have to be done in its 5-level plan, which it published some weeks ago. So this was always an option that may have to be arrived at. And as it was, Nev said, we should be arriving there right now.
I do think, though, that what might be slightly confusing for people is that last night we heard Leo Varadkar saying that this circuit breaker, as it was being described, was an experimental thing. Nobody had done it anywhere, and there was little evidence that it would have the results. But apparently tonight at his parliamentary party meeting, he was saying the circuit break thing might have to be done in a number of weeks.
Yeah, I hear those words, but I go back to what the government published after a lot of deliberation 3 weeks ago. It published a 5-part plan, and level 5 is that circuit breaker, which it thought about in detail, considered for weeks, and then decided on as the final option in a list of 5. So if it's experimental, we're being told that now for the very first time. I hope it's not experimental, by the way. But if you look at other countries, my understanding, there has been total shutdowns of they might differ in detail, but it's effectively what they have been.
I suppose the sense we were left with after last night, Richard, is are we all really still in this together? It just felt that we had moved to a completely new space, and it was a very concerning space to be in at this stage in a pandemic.
The whole situation is grim, and there's no good choices. Let's be clear about that. But Leo Varadkar's intervention was very unhelpful, because what he actually did was make a deliberate play to divide people. That's what he did by saying, I'm championing the people who are going to lose their jobs and their employment, as if anybody in this scenario thinks it's OK for people to lose jobs, income and employment. And of course, it's ironic that he should say that. When he's cut the PUP, he's lifted the moratorium on rents and evictions and mortgages, right? And in fact, I think that is some pressure on the government not to actually follow the public health advice, because they know if they have to go to higher restrictions, that the question of restoring the PUP, the eviction ban and the mortgage break immediately comes back on the agenda. Because you can't ask people to make that sacrifice unless you give them the economic support to get through it. And I think that's part of the problem. Now, our view is very clear, and we're being unambiguous. And it's not a very popular thing to say, but I'll say it again. We think we have to move now in order to a higher level of restriction, precisely not to be in a situation which is much, much worse in 2 or 3 weeks' time. We can't risk that. We can't risk the lives of our elderly and more vulnerable citizens. We cannot risk a situation where the ICU is overrun. That is not a risk that I am willing to take. Right? And I think we've got to, therefore, move now. And if we do so, it'll be hard, but at least there's some chance of getting the thing under control. If we leave it in a few weeks, it'll be longer, harder, more painful, and tragedy could seriously ensue. And okay. I just want to give a sense,
because we did ask people to get in touch with the programme. One, Leithibe Thánaiste Varadkar specialises in good news only. This is shoot the messenger politics. He throws the nearest minister or coalition partner, now NPHET, under the bus, says Chris. Another texter says we must look 2 weeks forward at least all the time with the virus. Today's figures are like a crystal ball. I think that's going with your point, Richard. That's David in Dublin. Who actually controls NPHET? benefit? Why are we taking advice from them, says another caller. Another says, I wonder if the captain of the Titanic was using his version of level 3 when he saw the icebergs, says Patrick in Drumcondra. Mm. And the dogs in the street, late debate, the dogs in the street know we can't afford level 4 or 5, is another caller. I'm going to take a break there because I should have taken one a little while ago, actually. We'll take a break there. We'll come back and continue this after these.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
For you were trying to get in there and I cut you off just before the break.
That's no problem. I was just saying, look, I think we are all in this together. When you look at what we've done over the last 6 months, there has been no good news for anybody. So there's nobody delivering good news. What we've done collectively as a country is try to suppress and manage a virus. There are a lot of people who have lost loved ones to this. There are a lot of people who have lost businesses and who are at risk of losing businesses and livelihoods as this goes on. We have managed collectively, overwhelmingly, for this to be policed essentially by consent, without overly draconian interference in people's lives, and we have managed to come through this and continue to come through this. There's always a moment of reckoning of sorts. There's always a sort of a grown-up moment in the room, isn't there, in difficult situations where sometimes like there can be a bit of attention flashed and maybe this is it. But we have been in this together so far, and I think we will continue to go through this together. But nobody's saying it's easy or that it's good news or anything else. This is really difficult and we've done incredibly well, and I think we can continue to do that.
Well, for the thousands of workers who had their PUP cut, and certainly the tens of thousands of workers who are going to be put off work through no fault of their own over the next while, I think it's very tough for them to believe we're all in it together. And I know healthcare workers, their infection rates are rising. They've trebled in the last 2 weeks. It's very difficult for them to believe we're all in this together. And I think, you know, what we needed to hear from the Taoiseach last night was not just the usual round of tea and sympathy, or indeed, you know, whatever attention seeking he was at. I think we actually wanted to hear, what's the plan? How are we going to keep this virus out of our nursing homes? How are we going to put ourselves...
I want to go to the nursing homes issue, because obviously when you say we've done very well so far, the one area we definitely have not done very well with is in nursing homes. And that is where so much tragedy was visited on so many families. And we're hearing today 31 confirmed cases in one Laois nursing home. We know there's a number of clusters around the country now, and there's a growing number of people in that over 65 age group that are now coming down as confirmed cases. I mean, the question now is, are residents in nursing homes now protected? Did we learn enough from what happened and those really tragic times back in April and May?
Well, I think we need to see a plan. I mean, and that's, you know, that's what's been so sorely lacking, actually, in this. If you have an elderly relative, someone in a nursing home, you want to see a plan, because we know that back in March, you know, there was so much that was unknown and unknowable about the virus and about the progress of the virus. But one thing that we very definitively learned was that it is absolutely necessary to keep this virus out of our nursing homes. So we need to look at things like agency workers working between nursing homes. We need to look at income supports for people who need to isolate, all of those things.
That issue,
and I'm not sure I'm sure that hasn't been done, because if there was a plan, we would have seen it by now. There is no plan.
Well, there was that issue about staffing of nursing homes, because that was obviously a huge issue. We know that a lot of the virus made its way into nursing homes because of staff and staff sharing accommodation, staff moving between one shift and another shift in another nursing home. I just want to have a quick listen to Sandra Farrell. She runs the Paterson Nursing Home in Roscrea, and she was on Drive Time earlier today.
I suppose, you know, if you look back, our main concern in March was that we didn't have access to BP. We tried to retain our staff, and we wanted testing and quick turnaround testing. So I suppose we have access to PPE now. We have testing. We have serial testing every fortnight now at the moment. What has come to light in the last 10 days is actually the retention of staff. We were sent into battle without the armour in March, but now we have the armour, but we may not have enough staff to wear it if the HSE keep recruiting staff from nursing homes.
So there you have it.
That exact same thing happened in March, you know, and it was an issue then. It's an issue now, and it's something that could and should have been planned for. And the question that we keep asking, I mean, Sinn Féin published our plan. We published our plan in August. But the question that you have to ask is, what was being done to plan for this? Because, you know, we knew winter was coming. We knew that that non-COVID care was going to have to start at some point. And of course it does, because the waiting lists are just piling up and piling up. And the question now is, where was the planning? Why was there not sufficient planning done? And why do we see now, and I know from talking to people in my own community, that there is a fear that this virus will get into nursing homes, and there is a fear that not enough was done to plan for it.
Richard.
Yeah, the answer at every level to resourcing nursing home and the health service generally is staffing. It's staffing, permanent staffing, not based on agency staff going in and out of this and that nursing home. Permanent staffing increases that are adequate. That's also true, by the way, of ICU. It's also true of the hospitals. It's also true of the tracing regime. Right? Some of these things were actually scaled back during the summer when we needed to be ramping them up on a permanent basis. So staffing, permanently recruited into all of these areas and a fully integrated system where people are in charge and there's proper standards. You see, I mean, part of the problem with nursing homes is it's totally fragmented. You know, HSE is in charge of one bit. This or that religious organisation is in charge of another bit. This or that private commercial entity is in charge of another bit. That's a recipe for disaster.
But should there be just straight off now a ban put on the HSE recruiting from nursing homes? There's no way you can do that, really, can you? There's no way you can stop somebody availing of a more permanent contract with the HSE if they're currently working.
But I think if we
for
had
an agency in a nursing home.
Yeah. Now, if we had adequate levels of staffing within our nursing homes, if we had an implementable staff to patient ratio in our nursing homes, I mean, we need to make the nursing homes an attractive place for people to work. I mean, people, you know, that like that, and that this has been said time and time again. And the fact is that over the last 20 years, we have gone from 80%, 20% mix between public and private to a 20%, 80% mix. And with that has come driving down wages and terms and conditions. That is a fact that has to be dealt with. It is up to the state to provide for people who all their lives have paid tax and at the, you know, at the latter end of their lives want to be able to live in some sort of comfort. And these people are the ones who have been failed. And I have to keep asking, where was the plan to keep this out of our nursing homes? It just does not seem to exist. And it is the one area that we know. So we no plan for nursing homes, no plan for our meat factories. And again, we're heading into another very, very fractious winter for the health service.
Okay, Gerard?
Yeah, well, the nursing homes are full of the people in our community who are most vulnerable. And minding those people in those settings requires a lot of detailed attention and resources. And if we go for, you know, a less vigorous system community-wide, people in the community who care for those people, and we're all in family settings where there's a mini sort of nursing home situation in the sense that we all have somebody in our extended family group or friends who are more vulnerable. And if more of us are more active in the community, we are all either in a nursing home setting or in our family circle more likely to be a conduit of this virus. And this is the balance. We close down, we stop it, are we trying to stay in an economy that can provide some of these payments that Louise has been talking about? Because it is a false positive to say that you can close down and you can pay all this. They're not compatible.
Or we can put the test and trace in place.
I
or
accept
we can
that's
have
part
a comprehensive
Louise,
plan to
all
be able
that,
to deal with
all
it.
Of that
and
that is one, absolutely
you see,
important.
You know, Gerard, that's
no,
the
no,
thing
I,
that
I do
wasn't
see,
done.
In fairness, if you
that's
just allow me to say
done.
This, I accept you are right on that, but to say that itself is a panacea is too far of a conclusion.
But that's not what I'm saying. But testing and tracing is extremely important. In fact, if you cast your mind back to March, there wasn't a government minister who could come within 100 foot of a microphone without repeating test, trace and isolate. That's absolutely essential. And then they started to use the phrase ramping up. They were going to be ramping up everything. But we find ourselves in a situation now whereby there still is a backlog for tests, where they're not doing the routine tests in the way that they should be doing.
Well, to
and
be
we're
fair
not
to Gerard, I don't think he's disputing that, and I think he made that case, but I think his
not,
point...
It's not a panacea, but there are other elements, but it is an important one. And again, it's one where but time was lost and it wasn't done during the summer.
Gerard.
Katie, it's an important component part in a bigger compromise between closing down, restricting the virus, but also restricting the economy and people's jobs and the money that's needed to keep everything going. And that is a balance in which there is no clear right or wrong answer. The government has made a judgment and the wisdom of that will be apparent within weeks.
Well, and there's just somebody texting in on exactly that. Katie, unfortunately, no one on your panel will lose €1 in income, no matter what level we move to. How are they representative of the population who are affected?
Well, I think, you know, we all have people in our own families who will. And, you know, it's not, it's I think, you know, you don't have to be personally affected by it. I mean, I know that there are many in the Dáil who are going to take a pay rise. I don't think now is an appropriate time for TDs to be taking a pay rise, actually. But I also think that our job is to ensure that we hold the government to account, number one, and that we work collectively, because it's in everybody's interest to get this right. And the fact that they're not getting this right, I think, is evidence that the government need to be working more collaboratively with the opposition. And that's clearly not happening either.
OK, the other thing we might need is some greater enforcement, which is something that I understood certainly when I was watching the reports last night, that this was part of what we were doing. We were doing level 3 plus extra enforcement. I think, do we have Leo Varadkar last night again, just very briefly, telling us that?
Well, we'll be the guards, and it's the guards that enforce the law. And obviously, there'll be additional guard overtime, as I mentioned, to facilitate that. And we will update the laws, potentially to bring in a different system of fines and so on.
OK, so that's, we will update the laws. That was last night. And then in Morning Ireland, the president of the AGSI, Antoinette Cunningham, was wondering what that would mean for her members.
Our members will be policing level 3 restrictions nationwide, and we haven't had any guidance on what that might mean. We have to manage government expectations, we have to manage public expectations, and somewhere in the middle, it's forgotten that by 12 o'clock tonight, this will be the problem of An Garda Síochána and the members of AGSI to police these enforcement restrictions, and yet we do not know at this point what they actually are.
So that was at Morning Ireland, Antoinette Cunningham. So move on a few hours, it's lunchtime now, and here's Justice Minister Helen McEntee on the News at One saying there are no new regulations.
Gardaí have always said they wanted to use the four E's, as they call them, engage, educate, encourage, and as a very last result, enforcement. And that has worked for the vast majority of people. But the fact that we're now moving from 2 to 3, there are clear differences.
Yes.
Gardaí will be policing those. It doesn't mean they need new powers to do that, because it will be an offence for people to organise an event indoors or outdoors. And there are measures that are already there that Gardaí can enforce.
Yeah, Jennifer, that's more mixed messaging, really, isn't it? Because it was going to be new powers, new laws, and there isn't.
Well,
we're sending the guards out there onto the streets, Operation Fanacht, and nobody has to listen to what they're being told to do.
Drew Harris came out today and said that they have the powers that they need for now, and if they find that they're not getting enough compliance with the measures with the approach that they have been taking, then they will ask for more powers. Minister McEntee has signalled today that she's very happy to look at that and to give additional powers and to introduce new penalties if, for example, we move into level 4, to give an additional persuasive element to those powers. But Drew Harris has said very clearly, we have the powers that we need for now. If we need more powers, then we will come back to you and ask for them, and the government will, I'm sure, be happy to put forward proposals to give those to the Gardaí. But we have been doing this, and the police have been doing
this. So just to be clear, the only power the guards have to enforce this, stay within your own county, is to slow down the traffic. That's my understanding from this evening, that they can actually pull you over, have a chat with you, they slow down, they create a traffic jam. That is the extent of it.
There are penalties there already for people organising events and so on. But you're right, you know, you can move at the moment between counties without getting a penalty as such. We haven't wanted to go down that road. We haven't needed to go down that road. Even when we were at the darkest days of lockdown, as it were, in April, and that there was over 1 million. And when the Gardaí did have those powers, which we let lapse, which in the hope that we wouldn't need to use them again, in over 1 million interactions between Gardaí and the public with those powers, they only took it to the next stage in 200 or 300 cases. So even when they had those powers, they didn't want to use them. That's not the sort of policing model that we have. But if we do need that, if we move to another level, which is completely possible, then I imagine that they will look at a graduated.
Richard.
No, but that's not mixed.
Coercion would be a disaster. So let's don't go down that road. What we need to do is convince the public, and we need to support them in the measures that we decide to take. The one good thing, Katie, that could come out of this spat is an open debate about strategy, right? And it hasn't been had in a full round way. There are different strategies available. Both of them carry risks, but certainly I think the zero strategy, where you go for short, sharp move to eliminate the virus so that you can open up on a longer term basis, or we keep bumping along in the way we are, not really sure what the future holds. Now, those are different strategies that are being articulated. I think the public need to hear the arguments on both sides, and then we need to make a decision, and then we need to support people to try and carry through on whatever strategy we decide to adopt.
Okay, I need to take another break.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And we're almost out of time, just time for a couple of more texts. We've had a big reaction to our debate this evening. How can your panellists say there has been no draconian measures when my livelihood and many of those in hospitality has been ripped away, says one texter. And another, why is nobody closing the off licences in supermarkets selling drink for house parties? It's from a listener in Tip. And I think that is a debate that is going to pop up again and again throughout this. That's all we've time for. I want to thank my panel for tonight's debate. I want to thank you all out there for listening. That's all we have time for. The programme was produced by Caroline Dalton. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon, and Tommy O'Sullivan was on sound. And now it's over to Colin Murray on Late Date.